Good morning, everybody. You are very welcome to Countrywide with a twist. Da, 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 da. Touch of class added to RT Radio's muckiest programme, adapted for voice choir, performed by Arnon, the RTE Radio Countrywide signature tune as you have never heard it before. Jack, Joe, Kian, Roddy, Connor, Tom and Kian number two, variously from Westmeath, Kilkenny, Kildare, Roscommon, Louth and Meath. We could not be more Countrywide this morning. Good morning. Who did the arrangement there?
That was Kian number two.
Kian number two. Fair play to you. Will you drown out the sound of the street sweeper in the background, please? Because it would be a shame not to hear that again. Give us a reprise. Da, 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 da. Available now for downloads wherever you get your music from. More from Arnon later on in the programme. Bloom opened to the public on Thursday, but the show gardens, hoping to win prizes, have been here days in advance. And on Tuesday, the judges saw the gardens for the first time. Then they saw them again on Wednesday, before gold, silver and bronze certificates were awarded on Thursday morning. So on Wednesday, I shook hands with a lot of sweaty palm, dry mouth, nervous competitors as the judges moved from garden to garden. With one notable exception, though, standing in a very verdant, bucolic garden commissioned by Repack, to borrow a phrase, was the garden designer who was making good use of the things everyday folks leave behind. He was the exceptionally relaxed-looking James Purdy.
In 2016 was my first garden.
And with the judges standing just over there, are you any less nervous than you were back in 2016?
I suppose 2016 you don't know what's going on, it's your first garden. Now you know the process and you're just happy it's done and done really well and you're enjoying the garden.
Oh, you are very chilled, aren't you?
Yeah.
I thought that you'd be a bundle of nerves at this point.
No, I don't need to be. First impression is you step into it and you change environment. It's peppered full of sculptural recyclable elements and all the material you walk on is all reclaimed material. So it fulfills Repack's brief of the most sorted garden, which is recycled, reclaimed, reused material.
I've never seen anybody put rusty aluminium cans into a garden and make it look attractive.
I touched on the main point of this garden. Everything I touched to use, I had to make it attractive or wouldn't come into the garden. You're working from a baseline of not looking at catalogues or suppliers. You're going to recycle centres, you're taking stuff that was going to the bin, disused material, and you're holding them in your hand saying, where's the beauty in this?
Yeah. Isn't that clever? All sorts of different bottles, wine bottles, beer bottles, gin bottles, with a big metal rebar shoved down through them, arranged into a door frame. And then the centrepiece looks like a water feature with some lilies glowing out of it, but it's actually an upturned filing cabinet. Absolutely ingenious. And then the tin cans growing out of the flower beds.
So we're looking at construction, we look at the suitability of material.
Mark Gregory explained to me what he and his fellow judges were looking for.
We're starting to look at sustainability and actually doing things in a more sensitive way.
That was exactly what I was going to ask you, because you could be at risk of indulging in something that is essentially frivolous, making gardens that are going to be disposed of if you weren't to be alert or sensitive to that issue of sustainability.
It's absolutely critical to our judging So these green credentials. So we're actually looking at, you know, ingenuity, and nothing gets past us. So, you know, what we do is we have the brief, we then we interview the designers on the garden for 2-3 minutes, and they say what's worked and what's changed in their brief, what they're really proud of, and they may want to show us a certain thing. And we celebrate that, actually. We celebrate that. So, you know, will Bloom have a green award? Absolutely, very, very soon. You know, so the whole thing is changing the way... So I don't see them frivolous. I think that actually there's a lot of inspiration.
I'm not asking you who has won this year.
Because you're not going to tell me.
No, absolutely, I couldn't.
But you can tell me, was it a clear winner, or was this a closely argued fight between all of you guys?
I wouldn't say there's ever a clear winner, but on points, yes.
If the heavens were to open tonight, if a garden was to be struck by lightning, does it still get its gold medal tomorrow?
100%, absolutely, 100%. No, nothing changes. We ratify them between ourselves and we hand it over to the show team and they print them up tonight.
Too many 8 a.m. on Thursday. Board B as chief executive, clutching gold, silver and bronze awards, approaches designers nervously standing by their gardens one by one.
Big cheer there, James. Well, that's it. Big cheer. Hey!
James Purdy and Repack take not only gold, but best overall in the large garden category as well.
So come here. How many of these do you have on the wall at home now?
That's the third gold now. So that was what I was reaching for. Third gold medal over the years.
Okay. And is that and three consecutive years or is that...
No, over the 1916 and 2025. Thank you.
Okay.
So it's good. Okay. It's kind of like what I was aiming for in the large, and this is just a bonus to win the category.
Just a bonus? Well, is that not absolutely the cherry on top?
Well, it is. It's a good cherry because then you're saying to yourself you've came and you've got your gold, but you've also been recognised as the best in category, which is a good award to get. I think what's nice now is there's 5 days to set a really... This sets a really good benchmark to talk to the public about saying the recycling has been judged and it's done really well and now you can see how we can use it in projects. So there's a good conversation to come out of this now for 5 days.
And those conversations, what do you get out of them? Do you get ideas out of them when you're talking to the public?
Yeah, I do get ideas. I get enjoyment out of it where you're actually saying to people confidently, here's what I've done, you can do it as well, and let's have a conversation about it.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
James Purdy, the winner there. If you are coming to Bloom today and you find yourself in the show gardens, take a look at Robert Moore's garden, which is right next to James's, because we are always on this programme talking about multi-species sward. Well, Robert has used MSS in his lawn. If we're still into lawns, if we're still doing that old colonial hangover of a thing, you should give consideration to using MSS because it looks beautiful. It's got all the clover stitched in and the pollinators are down working that grass in a way that they wouldn't be working any other lawn anywhere else. Now, across the country, 30,000 Tidy Towns volunteers are preparing for a different kind of judging altogether. From this day next week, the 7th of June, Tidy Town judges will start visiting the 900 or so villages, towns, communities that have entered the competition. You will not know the day nor the hour when an incognito judge will turn up in your village and score your efforts over the course of the summer months. And Dr. Christy Boylan is a long-standing judge and a trainer, indeed, of Tidy Town judges who has come to Bloom. Tomorrow afternoon he's going to share some inside knowledge, but he's going to give us a little bit of a preview of that. Now, Christy, thank you very much for coming into us. 7 days to go to the start of the judging. It's a little bit like the leaving cert this week. If you are only starting your tidying, you're probably a bit bunched, are you?
Ah, yes. It happens with an awful lot of preparation beforehand. And they're assessed on what they've done over the past 12 months.
Do you really make an effort to be incognito and go undercover?
Oh, yes, we do. It's actually quite strict. We're not allowed to communicate whatever with anybody in the community.
For fear that they would identify you and have a quick last-minute run around cleaning up the crisp packets?
Well, I'm not sure what reasons were actually given in the past, but it's just the way we do it. Maybe it's perhaps influence, but it would also delay you. And it wouldn't be fair to everybody. You see, if you meet somebody, you'd have to meet everybody.
Well, you'd have to have a cup of coffee and a cup of tea or whatever somewhere in every single house in town that you go to. So what is the final checklist that you would expect that they would be looking at this point in time and taking care of?
Well, the item that's always on the list and it never disappears is litter. Tidiness and litter control, and that's forever with us. So tidy towns are working on that year round, so that will have to be done. Also, in the past week or so, we've had unbelievable rain showers, and they have sent the weeds flying up through the ground, and I'm sure they're being excited at the moment to see them and try to have them controlled before the judges appear.
Okay. What people do for tidy towns has changed over the course of the year. There was a time when it was all about the hanging baskets. They're much less popular now. Now it seems to be all about the planters.
Well, it's not about the planters as such. It's about the plants you put into any bed or container.
Or it should be, yeah.
So the emphasis in the past was on showy displays such as petunias and geraniums. And now we've moved towards biodiversity, and those two particular plants are not good for biodiversity. So there's plenty of other plants that are suitable, such as perennials, such as lupins, for example, and foxglove and so on. And they're the ones that the bees like.
And will also require an awful lot less watering than the hydrangea, which was so popular of old.
Exactly, yes.
And I'm really interested, though, in the social dividend that comes from tidy towns competitions, because when they do this on the continent, it's done for them by the municipality. They have crews going around tidying up, but here it's an entirely volunteer effort.
Oh, yes, the tidy towns committees are totally voluntary, but now, in fairness, they do get support from the local authorities in many places, and there's also the specialists within local authorities, such as environmental awareness officers, who give them advice and so on.
But the initiative and the energy has to come from within the community.
Oh, yes, it must come from them, yeah.
And there must be a dividend from that as well, Christy. Like, I mean, it stands to a town when they do things together, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, the dividend, I can remember, I'm from Ballygemstuff, and the priest entered the tidy towns back in the late 50s, and he announced that if we can do well in this, we'll be able to get some industry into the town and get some employment. And we did. We won in 66 and 67.
Had Liffey Meats not arrived at that stage?
No, it hadn't, no.
And wow.
Wallpaper factories and other and other companies came, and that was the beginning of it.
Very good. Okay. So
the same applies elsewhere.
So you will be back tomorrow giving all of your tips and your insider knowledge accumulated over an entire career doing this. At what time?
Around 2 o'clock in the garden stage.
Excellent stuff. Christy, thank you so much for joining
this
morning. Thank you. Judging in the Tidy Towns begins next Saturday. Christy's book is called The Parks and Gardens of Dublin. It is published by Eastwood. Now, as you heard at the top of the programme, Arnon are our very special musical guests this morning. Each of the members sang at one point or another in the Maynooth University Chamber Choir. But it was a long chat at the Mullingar Fla last year that led to the formation of this group interested in singing Irish songs, and this is them once again with Dúlamán.
Dúlamán a bíne bui, Dúlamán a sléva, Dúlamán a faragas, Dúlamán a déja.
Dúlamán a bíne bui, Dúlamán a sléva, Dúlamán a faragas, Dúlamán a déja.
Ani ham bíin áhú sin an áhú ná fiúhúri, ó áhárin bíin áhú cán ar áhú hí ringa tíme.
Dúlamán a bíne bui, Dúlamán a sléva, Dúlamán a faragas, Dúlamán a déja.
Dúlamán a bíne bui, Dúlamán a sléva, Dúlamán a faragas, Dúlamán a déja. Dúlamán a bíne bui, Dúlamán a sléva, Dúlamán a faragas, Dúlamán a déja.
How does anybody do that at this hour of the morning? That is really impressive. Arnon, songs Doulamon, if you're enjoying them, Mind the Step is the debut album available on all streaming platforms. You'd also be able to catch them live on the entertainment stage here in Bloom at 3:15 this afternoon. Coming up after the break, there is a dairy herd in Kildare being milked as we speak in preparation for the next item on this morning's programme.
Email countrywide at rte.ie. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
Just coming up to 8:30. Good Saturday morning to you. We are live in the Phoenix Park for Bord Bia Bloom. This morning, our special musical guests are Arnon. Their album is called Mind the Step, and this weekend they are releasing a single from it called Skull. The composition is original, and the words are by Catriona Ní Clarkín.
Oh, Jimmy, na focal,
Skull from Arnon, released today as a single. We talked to them earlier on, found out that they are variously an accountant and analyst, a musician, a TV production person, student and broadcast journalist. The broadcast journalist was actually Jack from Shannon side Northern Sound, a job previously done by the previous occupant of this chair, Damien O'Reilly. Gone now to his eternal reward in Brussels. Poor Damien. Bord Bia Bloom is on the surface about two things, about gardening and about food, but under the surface there is a lot of business being done here. On the Friday morning of every bloom, before the gates open to the public, buyers from all the major retailers have breakfast with food producers looking for shelf space for their wares. Now, whether or not there are any multi-million euro deals struck, I can't say, but breakfast in the park to the accompaniment of the glass quartet is a very civilized way to do business.
My name is Donald Williamson and I'm the chairman of Love Irish Food. Getting to meet a buyer is a really difficult thing because their life is complex of maybe 70 to 200 suppliers trying to get their time. So an event like this gives them a bit of headspace and gives the supplier a bit of headspace in a totally different environment.
Forces you to stop answering emails and phone calls and actually meet people. 100%.
Exactly. And have a conversation about how you can grow an Irish brand, how you can support an Irish brand, and how you can get some space on the shelf.
I'm Michael from Velvet Cloud. We're a sheep dairy business in the west of Ireland.
Is this event important? Have you gotten business out of it before?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that, yeah. For example, we're on the shelves of M&S and we met the buyer here directly 3-4 years ago and it led to an eventual listing. And it's not just with them, it's with the rest of the retailers too.
Simon Byrne from Dunstores.
Have you come here with a shopping list?
My main goal today would be like bulb suppliers from local nurseries, just to see what trends are going on out there.
This event works for matching people who, like you, want something with the people who have something.
Yeah, that's the way I'm looking at it anyway.
Joe Manning, Tesco Ireland Commercial Director.
Do you not know all of these producers and their products already though?
Well, a lot of them we would know. But what you see here is you see the latest trends from smaller suppliers who tend to be more innovative, they tend to be more agile, and what you get is the opportunity to see trends, but you meet the people behind those trends, and invariably, Philip, those people are full of passion, they're entrepreneurial, and they want to build a business for themselves, and they want to work with businesses such as ours.
For some of the businesses, getting here to Bloom is going to just be a matter of firing some produce into the back of a van. For others, it is considerably more complicated, though. What if, for instance, the produce you are selling each day has to be first extracted from a cow, pasteurised, bottled, and then driven to Dublin? This year is Killadoon Milk's first trip to Bloom. They don't sell their milk to a creamery. Instead, Martin Donovan opts to use the milk from his 400 crossbred Jersey cows to supply a network of vending machines in the east of the country. Ella McSweeney visited him at Killadoon Estate Farm near Selbridge in County Kildare in his rotary milking parlour.
So we have a 54 bell rotary parlour. The milking starts at about 5 and we finish 7 or half 7.
For people who don't farm and wouldn't know what a rotary parlour is, just describe it.
You can imagine a big donut and cow walks on and the donut's moving around in a circle. Whoever's milking places the cups on to the cows for milking and the cow continues to go around the donut until they're finished milking and they step off at the back where they got on, basically.
And it's not like a roller coaster, it's going very slowly, yeah?
So the whole thing just moves quite slowly. This time of year, it's probably moving the slowest because the cows are at their peak sort of milk production. Or once the system knows that they've finished milking, the clusters automatically drop off.
And cows are intelligent. I mean, they know exactly what's going on. No one's telling them what to do. They're walking in, they're standing, they're being milked, they're walking off.
We only started milking in 2020 and they all just wandered onto it. I think it's a great system and it's very efficient from a labour perspective. After tasting the milk out of the bulk tank, the difference was phenomenal. So, we decided to go the vending machine route. It didn't really suit to have a vending machine on the farm, like what a lot of other farms you see in Ireland doing and up the north in England. With the fact that we're on Dublin's doorstep, we said we'd try and go into shops with the vending machines. And then also with the glass bottles, so the consumer buys the bottle or brings their own. They don't have to use our glass bottles. And they simply refill, so you're getting everything that the cow is given, you're getting, whereas when you buy whole milk in the shop, it's reduced to 3.5% butter fat. We'd be up on 6% sometimes.
How many vending machines do you have?
We're 7 locations now, so we're in Supervalue, Selbridge, Lucan, Churchtown, Rathgar, Fallon and Burn is where we started, and then we've Avoca Dunboyne, and then Rye River Cafe in Kilcock. So.
And the logistics of it all, I mean, how often are you going out refilling the vending machines?
So we do it, so say we pasteurised yesterday, we've gone out this morning with the fresh milk in it. And 3 days a week we deliver in. On the days we don't put milk in, we put in bottles.
You've got a lovely native woodland here.
2 weeks ago I heard a woodpecker. I didn't know what it sounded like, so I had to look it up on Google to hear the noise. But yeah, definitely, which I hadn't heard from when I was younger, is asking my mum as well, and she hadn't heard one as well, so that's a new addition, I suppose. And then the likes of Red Squirrel, actually, they're back over that side of the farm. When I was younger, they were everywhere, and then it was all grey squirrels, and now it's back to the red, so.
So we're just walking now along the bow herd, the cow path. The cows are with us. They've all been milked and they're walking out towards the field here. In a few days, you're going to be packing up and going to Bloom. Have you ever done Bloom before?
No, it's our first time.
Do you have any idea what's ahead of you?
It's hard to. We're actually just going through how we're going to pasteurise for next week and trying to figure out batch sizes and
So you're going to be back and forth to the farm during Bloom restocking.
Yeah,
refilling.
We're trying to, with traffic and whatever else, we're trying to figure out how it'll work at Bloom. So we have to keep a refrigerated van there with us.
And I should say, in the middle of all of this, you've also got a newborn baby. So it's all coming at you at once, and you're going to have 5 days of Bloom. What kind of things are people saying to you? I'm interested, especially in the younger generation. I presume the older generation are saying they love seeing the glass bottles again.
Yeah, a lot of that. And we hear every time you do a tasting, you hear about the foil cap and the birds pecking it.
Yeah, it's a strong memory for people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But what are younger people saying?
Some of them are going that it's too creamy. That's the feedback you'd hear. And then others that too creamy initially, but then they absolutely love it after.
So back in 2020, or even when you were working in New Zealand, did you ever imagine that you would be being so public facing? You know, because you could just be here in your farm, the processor could come and take the milk, and you could live a quiet life.
Yeah.
Listening to your woodpeckers.
Sometimes, yeah.
But you're stepping forward into the public.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly turning the farm to dairy has like given us a big lift. There's a lot of investment gone into it, but it's definitely paying off. This enables us to get the most out of the farm and have it looking its best and leave it better for the next generation. So definitely think I've managed to do that much anyway.
Hey, a lot of matchmaking going on here. You food producers like Martin Donovan there being matched up with customers, food producers being matched up with retailers, and also quite a few businesses have matched up with a mentor at Bloom. I think what you're going to find surprising about this next conversation is that many of the businesses that have approached a mentor for a bit of advice are very far from starting out on their road in business. I'm joined by Annie Dunn, a mentor from The Art of Great Food, by Anne Rudden from Anya's Chocolates, who has been mentored by Annie, and by Nicholas Dunn from Killowen Farm, who has been working with his own mentor in recent years. Good morning. Thank you very much, all of you, for joining us, though it's not exactly a penance coming in here today, really, is it? I don't think, folks. Annie, you grew up on a dairy farm in Cavan. Life then took you to London, a decade-long career in Harrods Food Hall. So obviously, you're no business slouch yourself. Why commit yourself to getting involved in somebody else's business?
Well, I think for me, I suppose my heart and my passion lies in food. And I suppose having been fortunate enough to grow up on a dairy farm and been exposed to what really good food is all about, it felt like my career was going to go down that pathway. When I chose to actually leave Harrods, I said, I actually reached out to some of my own mentors in life and was at a juncture in my own journey as to where I wanted to go. And they said, the best thing that you can do at this point is take all the experience of 25 years of working in the industry and share it with others. So I wasn't quite sure what that meant. But once I started to work with businesses, and I suppose I'd been working with over 150 suppliers in Harrods as it was, I realised that where I could add value was a really great feeling for me.
But why do it for others?
Why do it for others? Because I feel I have a level of experience in the industry that helps others to grow, and I suppose it just makes me feel good. And it's amazing just working with people like Anne from Anya's and identifying growth opportunities. I love change. I'm drawn to change. I'm drawn to innovation. And businesses, particularly in the food industry, have to be at the cusp of wanting to change all the time and evolving because there's a lot of factors that are constantly changing within the industry.
So what Annie's trying to say nicely is she wanted to show off how much she knew in life. Anne, I don't understand why it is that you, after you're 25 years in this business. I'm 25 years old too. That's some coincidence. That why at that stage in business, when you were really, really successful already, turn to a mentor?
Well, I've always turned to mentors because I do believe you need a good mentor to succeed as well. Because being in business, you know, you're there on your own, but the expert that you can get from mentors is absolutely amazing, and especially like from Annie. For me, 25 years in business, I'm very successful, but I was at, I suppose, a turning block. The business grew with me. So 25 years in business, I got older, the business got older, but you know, the marketplace is changing. And you know, to keep up, you need to be very, very innovative. The shelves are crowded out there, you know, globally. Mm. And I wanted, as a proud Cavan woman, to get my brand, you know, to increase my brand awareness. And I suppose...
Were you only ever going to take on another cabin woman as a mentor? don't answer that. What did Annie bring to the game for you?
Well, for me, it was all about the brand of Áineas Handmade Chocolate. And we strategically brought our brand to our true brand identity. And that was, you know, looking at our core USPs, which is what it is, truly handmade. And we looked then at our brand identity and the logo, and we elevated, you know, our logo to make sure that our brand can, you know, stand out in that retail, mm-hmm. that luxury retail market.
Something that'll make it just pop off the shelf.
Right? Yeah, so. And that people will stop and say, wow.
As they clearly do. Your awful tease bringing that amount of chocolate into studio and placing it right under my nose, because it does pop into your eye line. Nicholas, can I talk to you about mindset changes? I mean, you've gone from dairy farmer to businessman. Did you... Was having a mentor essential to that, or did you make that transition on your own?
No, not at all, Philip. I think, look, from day one, really, it was all about having the right people, the right skill set. So, like, if you take it is from milking cows on a daily basis to actually then starting to run a production unit in Cologne to trying to market it, deal with HR, deal with people through that, is I didn't have the skill set to do that.
Mm.
What I needed is to talk to someone that did have that skill set, and it can be, you can go two roads. You can be a loner and think you can do it yourself, or actually you can reach out and.
That's like almost a personality change for somebody who's been doing what you do, because farmers get to and generally tend to like their own company, which is just as well for them. You don't get much time alone running a business the size of yours, do you?
No, you never get any time alone. But the good thing is, I can pick up the phone. And I can phone somewhere, or they'll come in, and we'll, you know, there's different people for different courses, and how you do that is, like, we would have started through the original true leader into the LEOs,
mm-hmm.
Then Board B, who are brilliant at seeing what your skill set is, and sort of saying, well, listen, this is where we think you should move. You should talk to this, and maybe you should get them to mentor you for a period and get you through a period, and then
and the fact that it was subsidised or made free in some cases, I think, by LEO or by Enterprise Ireland. Helps, I would imagine.
Huge. Like, Enterprise Ireland are fantastic at their mentoring programs, and they'll never sort of say, listen, you need to go with that person, whatever. But they said, here's a range of people to have a look at, see who you get on with, talk to them, or whatever. And mentors are good like that. You can get to know them, understand where they're coming from, and a lot of them have been there and done that already. And like what Annie has been sort of saying is, well, given that experience.
In your yogurt business, then, best single idea that a mentor has brought to the program that you would never have had yourself, what was it?
The devil's advocate piece is you're selling them the dream of Cologne, or, you know, our vision or our mission or whatever on it, and they actually coming back to you and challenging that, and you suddenly realising, maybe, do you know what,
my idea wasn't that great. Yeah,
but it had the foundation of it. You had it right, but you just didn't know, we didn't have the delivery of it or how to take it on to the next step. And they paint you a pathway of doing it and showing you. So, it's
Annie, obviously, yes, you can be cautious and you can be a help to somebody like Nicholas. But I wonder, there must be a temptation when it's not your own business, when you're not invested in it, literally, financially, as well as emotionally, that you might be able to take or think about taking a few more risks than you would if it were your own business. Do you have to temper your ambition in that respect?
Look, I think the role of a mentor comes in many different ways. I think you have to challenge the norm, and, you know, present ideas that maybe hasn't been thought about yet, or, as Nicholas said, a pathway. But I think in the case of Anne with Áineas, it was a matter of building the confidence. So actually, the idea, the foundation,
build that woman's confidence
was there. Well, 25 years in business, confectionery is a challenging category. There's lots of great, you know, producers and brands coming through. And I suppose Anne was perhaps, you know, honestly feeling like, you know, I'm getting swamped, really. And how do I stand out in the crowd? So part of that role was to build the confidence. confidence back into it, and that actually there's a great story there. It's still the exact same story as 25 years ago, but it just needed to be wrapped up in a slightly different way.
And at the time that you met Annie, or brought Annie in with you, you were particularly worried about the price of cocoa. How was that affecting your ambitions?
Well, last February when I came back from the Ivory Coast and the cocoa market just went through the roof, I was like, am I going to stay in business, being honest with you, because it tripled and it was just crazy. And I just felt I really, really now have to, you know, I've worked for 25 years. I absolutely love what I do. I want to stay in business. I'm not going to, you know, lie down here. Mm-hmm. I want to keep going, and I want to be better, and to prove that it was look at that brand and just move it to the next level. Okay.
So what you really needed was somebody, a business mentor, almost as in the form of a personal trainer. You needed somebody saying, no, give me that extra push up. Keep on going.
Keep going, and you're great. You are great, but you just need to be better.
But also to just help Ant understand that there are programs out there that would really benefit her at that point that she was at. And the Brand Bite program, which is one of the, Anne was one of the participants on last year, funded by Skillnet Ireland, was the reason why Anne was able to take her brand from, you know, where it was last week to where it is now today in terms of its new look and feel. And that journey, that program, it was a 15-week program, really helped to elevate her.
And in selecting a mentor, Nicholas, I presume you don't have to go for another managing director type. You can go for somebody whose area of expertise is packaging or distribution and logistics or whatever.
Yeah, I think it depends on what your issue is, and it's talking it through. First of all, first piece is for someone to listen to you. That's the first piece, and to actually give you a steer or whatever, and out of that, and like, is you can move it on. But like, the other piece is the programs that, say, Philip, that you do with, say, both Enterprise Ireland and Board B. Like, I've just come off one with Enterprise Ireland. It's a Leading Edge program that just ran. There's 31 companies in that. Before I left, we had a WhatsApp group with 31 people in it. I know them. I spent 3.5 days with them or whatever, and I know them all very well. But I can text or phone any one of them and sort of say, listen, you're
really
talking. Yeah, it's incredible.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I would have thought on some level, you're all competitors as well, aren't you?
In the room, Philip, there was only two food producers in the room. There was guys from sustainability, there was printers, there was project managers. There was almost 31 different businesses.
Okay.
But the honesty in the room, when you put business people in the room, the honesty that comes in with people and the amount of sharing that they're willing to do. I think a number of years ago, I'd done a program, Coca-Cola Thrive program with Enterprise Ireland. There's eight of us. It's 8 years ago. We still contact. There's eight of us that contact one another. We'd put up on a WhatsApp or we'd make a call and sort of say, listen, I've a bit of an issue or whatever. And just sort of say, listen, I use such and such a guy for that. And that's how we get our mentors and the specialist. And in fairness, there are some incredible people out there with incredible knowledge that can share.
By coincidence, both of you have two arms to both of your businesses. There's Kilo and Yogurts, and then you do own brand for some of the supermarkets.
Yeah.
Anya, you do your chocolate, and you also do own brand as well. How easy is it to keep both of those plates spinning simultaneously and not end up neglecting one of them?
Yeah, for us, Philip, it drove our business. Like, private label helped us so much because it gave us volume in our business. The cooperation that we have with the retailers is phenomenal. Like, they brought us along on the quality route. They brought us, they ran programs that we attended or whatever. And it actually was, it developed and helped to develop. It was almost like being mentors to us at some stages. Now, look, there's tough times as well with it. And there always is that clash between your brand and your private label work. But the pieces and the mindset you need to get into is your relationship is all about strategy. And they like strategy and they like sort of saying, well, listen, we need your brand and we need private label from you. And it's then how you manage that and manage it with them and sort of say, listen, my brand is important. I need my brand for my business, but I'm willing to trade private label. And that's it. Sometimes it's a trade-off. Sometimes it's about your innovation. Our innovation comes through our brand. And it follows through in private label because there's always a life cycle on every product that you do, and that's how you do it. But it's they work with you and work well with you, but you have to manage it.
It's never been Sophie's choice for you. You're able to love both children equally, are you?
Yes, for me it is, and it did bring, you know, our business journey. It brought us volumes. We learned loads from, you know, doing private label plus our own brand as well. So, you know, it did bring us on a, you know, a bigger business journey.
Very good. SkillsNet is the place to go. To go and find yourself, your mentor, and see if this is for you, Annie?
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's lots of ways that you can get mentors. I always say, think about your network around you, who's a free mentor, essentially, that you can rely on, use as a sounding board. At SkillNet Ireland, there's fantastic programs running through that. The way in which I get lots of mentoring is through Blasnaharan Irish Food Awards, who, you know, if you're shortlisted or win, they've been going now for 17 years.
And there are plenty of people who did, as your sister did, I think. Nicholas just bumped into one here at Bloom a couple of years ago after walking out of the Countrywide studio. All right, Nicholas, Annie, Anne, thank you all very much for joining us in studio this morning. That is just about it. Thank you to everybody who met us at Bloom and shared their stories with us. Thanks to Eileen Herron, to Tom Norton, and to Padder Carney back in studio, to Amandine Paso Devine, and to Liam Mullen. Arnon have been our very, very special, incredibly talented musical guest this morning, and they are going to sing us out for all of you travelling to Bloom this morning. The gates are just about to open here at the Phoenix Park. This one is for you.
In the merry month of June, from me home I started, left the girls a tune, nearly broken hearted, saluted father dear, kissed me darling mother, drank a pint of beer, me grief and tears to smother, then off to reap the corn and leave where I was born, a cloud to stout blackthorn, to banish ghosts and goblins in a new pair of brogues, rattling o'er the bogs and frightening all the dogs, on the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the way to Dublin, whack for lolly rock.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.